The Outer Rim. The Final Frontier. These are the news stories of the Outer Rim. To explore strange new fandoms. To seek out new life and new science fiction. To boldly go where no fan has gone before.
Not good.
Blast!
Look, don't worry. Everything's gonna be fine. Trust me.
That's just great.
Now, discussing the news on the edge of fandom.
Set your hyperdrive motivator for full throttle.
Chewie, get us out of here!
We're headed to the Outer Rim.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Outer Rim. This is episode number 64. We're recording this on, Wednesday, the 10th of November. And I'm recording this with Chris tonight. Chris, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Awesome. It's just you and I tonight. Eric is traveling with family, so he is not able to join us tonight. And unfortunately, we are scraping the bottom of the barrel for news this week. I didn't see a lot of good entertainment stuff coming out this week. And granted, there's been a lot of other things in the news over the last couple of days. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
just
to say
things.
The least.
Yeah. So our international fans may not, you know, maybe skip past this next section because we'll talk about the election for a few minutes here. Nothing dramatic. We're not getting into any political discussion or anything, but I think we can all say that this was probably the most, seeing as this is an entertainment show, the most entertaining election we had
in
a long time.
That is definitely a great way to put it. And you know about you, but yeah. I was watching CNN's coverage.
Okay.
And it was fascinating to me because usually, you know, you think about someone just like if you think about the idea of just people talking for, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, depending on when the next polls close, talking about numbers. It just seems mind boggling to think that it could be anything other than boring.
Right. Well, you know, that was a funny thing.
And I was like, time just flew by.
Yeah. You know, every time you turned your head and you're like, oh, wait, another poll is closing. Oh, we're getting more results. You know, it was kind of interesting to watch it from that perspective. And I've watched elections before. And, you know, I mean, I've got a few years in you, Chris. So I've seen a few other elections. But, this one seemed to be just, I mean, the newscasters had no idea what was going to happen. And that struck me as being very bizarre because usually they get a pretty good handle on how things are going to go, what states are going where, and they were truly surprised. I wasn't watching CNN; I was watching the NBC coverage, and you could tell they were truly surprised every time something came in and something changed or some, you know, state was closer than they could call. And I'm like, wow, you know, these guys are really surprised by this, and that's always entertaining to watch because then it's just off the cuff. It's not like they had this all prepared.
Yeah,
you know, they had no idea what to say about a Trump presidency because they had no one suspected it. And in fact, I found this very bizarre. The next morning, I was watching the Today Show before I was getting ready for going to work, and one of the guys had mentioned that they had numbers from the GOP that was their best guess predictions as to what was going to, take place, what states are going to win, what states are going to lose. And I get the impression what they're talking that both parties do this for all the news agencies, give them these numbers ahead of time, but embargo them until the next morning. So they can't talk about what the GOP thought was going to happen versus what really did happen until the next day. And the GOP expected to lose. They you know, is anytime you see anybody on camera, they're always saying, oh, we're positive we're going to do this and we're good. You know, we're all really high on enthusiasm. And, you know, none of them believe that. I mean, they actually believe they were going to lose the election and yet they won. So that even right there, you know, when the party themselves didn't think they were going to win, you know, it just really goes to show you how much of a mismatch. Mismatch maybe isn't the right word, but you know how much of a black hole this whole election process was. People I talked to beforehand didn't have any idea who they were going to vote for, even like the day before. They just had no clue. This is the first election I can remember watching where people didn't want to vote for either one. You know.
Yep.
I mean, I think this goes to show you that the process is broken as far as coming up with candidates. I mean, I don't know how you feel about this. And we talked a little bit about the election process back when we were down in New York at Comic-Con, you know, on our train rides and walking around and stuff. But I forgot what your impressions were of the whole primary process, getting to the point where we have, you know, Hillary versus Trump.
Well, I should first point out that I am a political science, well, my major was political science in college. So I have a degree in that, a bachelor's degree. And, okay, regarding the primary, I think it was, I think it's a terrible system the way it's currently set up.
Okay.
Actually, okay, in theory, it's a good system because obviously you don't want to go to election day and have three Democrats against 12 Republicans, just like, you know, we were having.
Right.
At the start of the campaign process. And or did I say I meant to say three Democrats and 12 Republicans? If I think I might have messed that up.
At least if you didn't say that's why I took it. I thought that's what you said.
Okay, so it's a good in theory. It's a good system, but there's different kinds of primary elections. You know, you have caucuses, you have open primaries, you have closed primaries, you have direct primaries, and West Virginia has a we have a closed primary system. So you have to vote for, if you're a Republican in the primary, you have to vote for a Republican candidate. If you're Democrat, you have to vote for Democrat. If you're independent, I think if you're independent, you can vote independent or...
If it's an open primary, I think you can, right?
Yeah. Well, if it's an open primary, you can vote for anybody, regardless of affiliation.
Okay.
West Virginia does not have that luxury. So I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, but my registration is Republican. And I could not vote for Bernie because I'm not a Democrat. Right. I'm not registered as a Democrat. So,
right. And I'm registered independent, so I can't really vote for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, if you were in a state with an open primary, you can vote for anybody. So it's a really weird process. And then when you get to the general, you know, you can vote for anybody, but then not really anybody, but you can vote for either party. But then it comes down to like what we saw here. If there's nobody that you like, I mean, what do you do?
Right.
And furthermore, if you're in a state where like Donald Trump was going to win West Virginia, no matter what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he won. Literally, when the polls closed here, they announced that he won. They didn't even have to count a single vote. Like, they just projected that he was going to win, which was right. Hilarious to me. So, you know, as some I will go ahead and just say I voted for Hillary Clinton. And technically, my vote doesn't matter. I mean, it does in the popular vote, but the popular right. vote also doesn't matter. So
that's not how we elect the president. Right. I mean, that's like me. I mean, you know, I didn't so much vote for Trump as I didn't vote for Hillary. I guess that's how I would say it. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Connecticut went, you know, Democrat, and my vote doesn't matter. And, you know, when I was really looking at the process this year in some of the, you know, discussions, you know, was it Maine and Nebraska both have a system where they split the electoral votes?
Yes.
And that, to me, makes more sense because, you know, you get states like, you know, Texas or California with this huge numbers of electoral votes going. And if it's a close race in those states, I don't even know what it was this year, but if it was, say it was 49-51%. Well, okay, almost half the people like the other candidate, but all 55 votes in the case of California would go to one candidate. Mm-hmm. That just seems wrong that, you know, all those people, their vote didn't count at all now. You know,
yeah.
So I don't know. I think the system's broken for getting the candidates, you know, for through the primary process to the election, and the process is broken for how we elect the president. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very, very complicated process. And, you know, people are currently saying that the Electoral College should, one, be abolished and we shouldn't have that anymore. And or two, that they should forget what the you know, what the results were and actually elect Hillary because they are well, at least in some states, the electors have to vote for whoever wins the state. But for the most part, the Electoral College can, if they so choose, elect the other person.
Yeah, I've read that also, that the voters for those electoral votes can vote any way they want to. Mm-hmm. They usually pledge them the same way the vote went, but
yeah. I think they've
always done that. I don't think anybody's ever gone against that, but
it
could.
It theoretically, yes, it could. It's not going to.
No, I don't think it would either.
But then you also have the matter of, if you get rid of it, then it'll take one other crazy instance of, just some other crazy election for people to want something else. And it's just,
Then, what do you change it again? And, the thing that, when you think about that, and I've always said this for the last couple of elections now, I think they should do none of the reporting until the next day. Mm-hmm. As entertaining as it was to watch Tuesday night, you got to admit it was entertaining. Mm-hmm. Don't broadcast any of this stuff until the next day. Maybe do exit polls, but don't get numbers and release numbers and enter things into big maps. Because, if I'm out in California and it's already gone one way, why am I going to go out and vote?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I'm going to vote for the candidate who's not going to win my state, and my state's going to go the other way, why would I go out and vote then, Mm-hmm. Whereas if you went with a total popular vote and the polls closed, like they do now at, 7:30, 8 o'clock in your time zone, if the popular vote is going one direction and the West Coast decides, hey, Arkansas is going to lose, we need to get everybody out to vote, you could see that happen based on what mm-hmm. the news is reporting. So, there's some pluses and minuses to the Electoral College, and you'd have to say that in a popular vote, I think the West Coast would be able to dictate what happens based on, how nervous they are about how close the candidate, how close the race is for popular vote. And, so I'd say, do none of that report until the next day, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, if nothing else, we're going to get some very entertaining Saturday Night Live episodes for the next 4 years.
Yeah. I think not only SNL, but just TV and
everybody. Yeah.
Potentially movies in general.
I mean, Alec Baldwin probably was home that night going, yes, I've got a job for 4 more years on SNL. Yes. Yes. So that's the entertainment twist of this whole story, is that we'll get some good SNL stuff out of this and probably some good other stuff like you said, Chris. Mm-hmm. That'll be fun to watch. Well, I guess the only good news item I found this week was about the movie God Particle. Have you heard anything about this, Chris, God Particle?
I saw a blurb the other day, and I was like, this is on my radar. For reasons that I'll let you explain.
Okay, yeah. Well, so for anybody who hasn't heard, God Particle is the name of the movie being produced by J.J. Abrams that is supposedly in the Cloverfield universe. This will be the third movie after Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane. And we don't know much about it. This is pretty much a, tightly kept secret, kind of like 10 Cloverfield Lane was. And we don't know much about it. They've said it's about, what was the exact quote? It was something about astronauts in a space station coming back to some strange stuff going on. So, they haven't let anything out. But the fact that we're getting another movie in this franchise is exciting for me. Now, Chris, you saw Cloverfield, right?
Yes, it is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Ooh, favorite movie also. That's nice. Mm-hmm. Now, do you not to change subject, but do you do flick chart? Do you do a flick chart yourself?
No, I do not. I keep telling myself that I need to, but
I was
going to
ask where
it's
in your chart. No, I can't. Well, thanks, Chris.
But I keep telling myself that I need to do it, but I'm like, wait a minute. I know that it can get kind of addicting, so I need to wait until I'm not. Have a bunch of other things going on at the same time.
It is definitely addicting, but yeah, you should definitely do that and get your list down so you can then see where it falls in your favorite movies. So you can get that list built, and just a little slight plug there for a flick chart that our friend Nathan is the owner of. But yeah, so you know, one of your favorite films is Cloverfield, and I really enjoy Cloverfield as well too. I thought it was a great take on a U.S. version of a monster movie. There's one that one scene that made me feel a little bit uneasy, and you know, the whole found footage films, the whole shaky cam thing gets people a little queasy sometimes in their seats. But that one sequence where the monsters were down one end of the street and the army was at the other end of the street, and the kid with the camera kept panning back and forth like as fast as you would turn your head, and I'm like, oh my, okay, you gotta stop. You got to stop moving your head that fast because I'm going to get sick. But overall, that film was just phenomenal. I thought the film was great. And I totally lost track of the fact that it was a found footage movie until the very end again. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this was based on the kid's video camera. This was just footage they were watching. I'm like, oh, my God, I totally forgot about that. That's how good the movie was. Because a lot of found footage movies, you know, I feel like you know they're found footage. You know they're trying to be kind of, clever with the footage and the hand camera, and it's not professionally shot type thing. This one didn't feel that way to me. But then 10 Cloverfield Lane came along last year, I think it was, right? 2015?
I think it was actually...
Or earlier this year, maybe.
It was earlier this year, yeah.
Yeah, it may have been, yeah, okay. But now, did you see the sequel?
No, I've not got to see it, unfortunately.
Okay, well, it's not a direct sequel to Cloverfield. It's not like it picked up right where that one left off. It's not like it's not even like they did anything with that original story. It's almost like a side story to Cloverfield taking place in the same universe. And you don't even really realize that until the very end, truthfully. But that was kind of cool that we're getting movies in the same universe. I kind of hope this is the way they do some of the Star Wars stuff going forward, that we're getting movies that are not part of the trilogy, that are just kind of off to the side. I mean, I think they could take a good page from this if they're going to, do this for some side venture movies in Star Wars, that we could get a good movie that has nothing to do with the main trilogy, but in that same universe. And that's what 10 Cloverfield Lane really did. Now, God Particle could be as bizarre as 10 Cloverfield Lane was in relation to the first movie, because it's astronauts on a space station with a crew of people they don't really know each other, and there's some weird stuff going on. So who knows what this is going to be about. But I'm excited. And what's making me even more excited about this whole thing is they did say in the same article that they are planning on looking at doing a movie in this universe every year. I know,
that's
right?
Interesting.
And this kind of gives you that feeling of we could do anything because we don't have to build on what we just did. Not even the same characters, not even the same city. It's just this is happening at the same time somewhere else in the world. I really like the thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if Paramount really gets their act together and does a good job with this, I am going to be a fan of all these movies, I think.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes. I hope we don't lose the thrill and the kind of the magic of everything. And I don't want things to get watered down and become too much. But it's interesting to think about, yeah.
I mean, if they do a take, if this God Particle movie is related to Cloverfield the same way that 10 Cloverfield Lane was, I don't think you're going to have to worry about that, because 10 Cloverfield Lane could have been not even related to Cloverfield for most of the movie. Most of the movie was the characters interacting. And you knew there was something going on. You knew there was something weird happening, but you didn't know it was the same universe as Cloverfield until you got about two-thirds of the way into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, they could do anything going forward. But they still kept the interaction. They still had the... at the very end of the movie, you got a really good sense of what was going on. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah, this really is the same world. And I'm glad I've now seen this installment in the story.
Mm-hmm.
So, I am very excited. This is good news, and to have Abrams still involved with it, I think, is even better news. And if we're going to get one movie a year, and the fact they're not tied to making sure everything plays into each other really well and not worrying about changing something. And, you know, Star Wars fans know this all too well. You know, how do you write a story and, oh, that doesn't work with what we already said before and, you know, this and that. And you got to retcon everything. This doesn't have to worry about that at all. I would like it eventually if we have some interaction between some of the characters from the different parts of the universe. Almost like a cameo of somebody walking by screen and, oh, hey, that was so-and-so from the first movie, you know, type thing. That would be kind of fun. But yeah, I am, I'm all over this. This is really good news for me. And once again, J.J. Abrams is doing stuff that we all love. So nothing wrong with that.
I was actually at an antique store over the summer in Tennessee, and we were, just walking through the store, and I saw movie posters, and I think they were like $10 each. They were actually from a movie theater, and they were they were up against a cardboard background. It looks like I can't tell if it's just me, but they might have been outside because some of them were actually in really good condition. Others were kind of a tad bit faded, but I found a Cloverfield poster.
Really
good condition, and it's a little bit faded, so I don't know if it was outside or if it was like inside the theater. I don't know, but it's huge. It's the theatrical size, and I want to get it framed, just because, you know, normally I would just put thumbtacks, but since it's my favorite, one of my favorite movies, I kind of want to, and it's theatrical size, I want to get it in a nice, relatively nice frame to hang up. But I've yet to do that.
Yeah, so. I've got a few movie posters that I've got put away in the attic that are all still in tubes that I want to get framed, but, you know, and you want to do it nicely, but the thing is, nice frames and professionally framing is expensive, so.
Yeah.
I kind of wait till I can put away a few bucks and then do one at a time here and there. I've got the one I really want to get done that I love is my teaser poster for The Phantom Menace.
Ooh, yeah.
The one with Jake Lloyd in front of the building and the shadow is Vader behind him. Oh, I just love that. It's an awesome, awesome look.
I think, speaking of posters, that's one thing that I love. I love movie posters. And Star Wars, I think, has had some really good posters throughout, you know, its time. I love each teaser poster for the prequels. I really enjoy. I like The Phantom Menace. Revenge of the Sith it's lost a bit of its luster since it first came out. But I really liked the idea of having Anakin on one side, and then in his little cape thing is Darth Vader. And then I think episode 2, the one that I remember was of Anakin and Padme, like back to back, which was interesting. But I think
I don't remember the teasers for those two movies. I mean, the first one I have, I may have those too. I can't remember what I bought. Back when those movies were coming out, it wasn't StarWars.com, but it was the Star Wars Insider magazine had a companion website, and they sold the posters. The original theatrical release posters you could buy directly from them. And I got each one of those through them that way. And now you can't, they don't do that anymore. And you can't find the posters anymore unless you go through these sites that charge you an immense amount of money for some of these posters. And I'm like, it's too bad. Because I really wanted to have a whole collection of them. But, what are you going to do? But yeah, movie posters are definitely fun for me to get and collect and see. I should make a collage of screensaver for movie posters on my computer. That'd be kind of cool.
So that'd be nice.
Rotate through all your favorite movies. You can probably find them online somewhere and just let them rotate through. Oh, well.
So,
but one last thing about the movie, God Particle. That may not be the ending title, because 10 Cloverfield Lane had a working title as well, too. I can't remember where it was in the story here. But so don't expect God Particle to be the final title. You may find something else as it comes to release. And let's see here. Oh, you know, the actors from God Particle... I had no idea it was a Cloverfield movie.
Well, didn't they do the same thing for 10 Cloverfield Lane? Like, originally it was just a standalone thing, and then once production got started, they were like, hey, there's a way we could tie this in or something like that.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the original story, that 10 Cloverfield Lane was its separate thing. And then once production got, you know, shooting and they got, you know, really into it, they found that they could tie it in some way. So then they did and made some changes to the story. And I don't know how it's tied in, and I don't want to know until I watch it.
Right. Yeah, so I won't spoil that for you. But you're absolutely right, though. The first, like I said, 2/3 of the movie could be anything. Could be any kind of a... I mean, you know the premise behind it, right?
Vaguely.
Okay. Well, I mean, watch the movie, but the beginning, you know, like I said, 2/3 of the movie could actually be any other movie about this kind of a topic of, a thriller.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to play into Cloverfield universe, but it does at the end, and it works well. But I could definitely see how they would have had this story going and all of a sudden say, hey, you know, we could change this one little thing here and this one little thing there and then tack this ending on and have it be part of the Cloverfield universe. It doesn't feel added on, but you can definitely see how that could have been the case.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, that's cool. I didn't realize that. Well, we shall see. I don't have any dates at all for the release of God Particle, but keep your eyes peeled for it.
Now I want to go back and watch the original Cloverfield before I see 10 Cloverfield Lane.
I came back from 10 Cloverfield Lane and watched Cloverfield after I saw it again.
Mm.
So I did see them back to back, but kind of in reverse order. Because the person I went to with the movie had never seen it, so we came back here and watched it at my place. And it was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was fun.
So I kind of have something for the What Were They Thinking segment.
Okay, good, because I didn't have anything for that segment.
So, on Tuesday, I had two jobs, and I worked the first one in the morning, but I was off for the second one, so because it was election day.
Okay.
So me and my roommate, that afternoon, we watched London Has Fallen. Now, have you seen either Olympus Has Fallen or London Has Fallen?
I have not.
Okay. Do you know what it's about?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. So, well, for those of you that don't know, Olympus Has Fallen is it has Gerard Butler in it, and he's a Secret Service guy who, I think the president of the United States gets kidnapped, or because somebody, I think maybe somebody invades, or he gets kidnapped, or something like that, and Gerard Butler's character has to rescue him, which, spoilers, he does, and because of course the good guys win. And I mean, it's not the best action movie in the world, but it was entertaining. It came out a few years ago. Now, London Has Fallen was released either this year or last year. I want to say it was last year. And again, kind of continuing the storyline, but it was set in London. The premise was that I think it was the Prime Minister of Great Britain was dead, and all the world's leaders were, you know, gathering in London for his funeral. And then somehow there was a terrorism plot to attack all of the world leaders and kill them. And then the president gets kidnapped again. So Gerard Butler's character has to rescue him again. And, you know, on paper, you're like, okay. Maybe, you know, the first one did all right. It was received. It had mixed reviews. But for the most part, it was generally said, okay, this isn't a terrible movie. So we watched London Has Fallen. And needless to say, it was not that good.
Okay.
For just an action movie to watch, just because I was, you know, I was at least entertained. I like, you know, just something where you go and the good guy goes and defies the odds and ends up winning. But this was just it was bad for a few reasons, and I won't get into everything, but I want to comment on the CGI, because it was hands down some of the worst CGI I've ever seen.
Really?
Yes. Lou, I'm not kidding. You need to really, like, at some point, you need to look up London Has Fallen on CGI and just, like, watch some of the scenes from it. It is awful. Which is, it's weird, because, you know, this is a big budget action movie blockbuster. I mean, it's not like huge.
Oh, I remember when it came out, it had all kinds of press, and it was all over the place as far as you know, marketing goes. Yeah.
Now, I'm just wondering why is it this bad? It's like somebody, you give the special effects people a copy of the film, and you're like, okay, do your magic.
Right.
Well, it's like handing a college student an assignment and say, do this in 2 weeks. And then the night before it's due, the college student stays up all night, does it all in one day, one attempt, and hands it in, and
this
they
is,
get a
yeah,
C.
This is good enough. Yeah. Wow.
It's so bad. And it made me think, we are in a really, really good age right now. We have some fantastic computer generated effects. We have, you know, we have entire movies that are pretty much just nothing but CGI, which, you know, even 10, 15 years ago is not really, you know, that well thought of. It. Yeah, you had them, but it wasn't right. Anything like it is now. So I just want to know how this happened. And like you look at TV, The Expanse is a brilliant example of some of the best CGI for definitely for sci-fi on television right now. And they don't nearly have the I think the budget for London Has Fallen was around, give or take, 80 million or so. Might have been 60, but I'm pretty sure it was 80. But it was awful.
Wow. Yeah, I actually just looked it up on Box Office Mojo. Excuse me. It was March of this year, and you were right. $60 million was the budget.
Mm-hmm.
It made $62
million domestically. Yes, it made, and I think overall it obviously made its money back. But I mean, it's weird. And the worst part is they're making a sequel, and it's going to be called Angel Has Fallen. Now, I was curious, okay, what's Angel mean? Are they getting supernatural on us? And then I saw that the code name for Air Force One, I don't know if this is true or not, but at least in the movie, this is what they're doing. The code name for Air Force One, which is the president's plane, is titled Angel.
Okay.
So assuming they're going to go on a plane trip and somehow get attacked, and the president's probably going to get kidnapped again or something.
They got to keep better track of the president. I mean, if he's getting kidnapped three times, that's just wrong.
Like, you would think, okay, after the first time, okay, you know, I'll finish out my term. After the second time, I'm sorry, guys, I'm resigning. I cannot handle this. Third time.
If you guys can't take better care of me, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. That is a good one. What were they thinking?
Yeah, I just had to go on a bit of a rant there because, you know, usually I can look past bad CGI and just stuff that looks fake, but this just takes it to a whole other level.
Mm-hmm.
And if we live in a time of really good CGI, this is just unacceptable.
Well,
it honestly makes you look like a sci-fi movie.
It really is like making me wonder because there are some really good sci-fi stuff on low budget.
Mm-hmm.
And you get these ones that are fairly big budget movies, and it's like, did you not take the time to process that a little bit more? It's like, what? Yeah. You know, you could have lined that shot up a little better. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You see it a lot out there, to tell you the truth. It's not just this movie. It's just like, what were they thinking? It does not make any sense to me how, you know, you can do pretty good special effects with your own computer and mm-hmm. have it look, you know, as good as some of the movies that we see that are just really, really bad. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Ah, boy. That's a shame. I will definitely look up some of the stuff on YouTube and see if I can see some of this bad CGI you're talking about and get a good chuckle. So,
which you know how sometimes they have visual effects breakdowns.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going through YouTube the other day because I wanted to search London Has Fallen CGI, and just kind of get an example. I don't remember why, but I think I was just doing it for fun. And I saw they had a visual effects breakdown, and I meant to go back and watch it. So I'm going to have to do that after we record and just and see what the process was, because it's just laughable. I mean, if you're looking for an action movie just to have on the TV, maybe in the background, I mean, it's on Netflix. You can go watch it right now if you want. I mean, it's not the worst thing you could put on, but it's not. It's just, no. I'll pass.
Do you want a really bad Gerard Butler movie? What was his first one? Gamer, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really bad movie.
I saw that in theaters.
Did you really?
I
had wanted to. I never did. I saw it on video later. I'm like, wow, I dodged a bullet with that one.
I mean, it was pretty bad, but it was not, you know, it wasn't one that I would see again.
Yeah, no, there are worse movies out there, but yeah, that's not, it's not Academy Award winning stuff. So let's put it that way. Well, let's move into the lightning round, Chris. What do we have in there this week?
We have quite a few, interesting tidbits. I'm going to save the one I want to talk about, for last.
Okay.
So, it's a shame Eric's not here, because Fox is already planning a Deadpool 3 with this time with the X-Force.
Deadpool 2 isn't even out yet.
I know.
They haven't even shot Deadpool 2, have they?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't even know if they've started production, honestly.
Well, good to thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of things with X in the title, apparently Bryan Singer is not going to come back for the next X-Men movie, and it's going to be another reboot.
Another reboot. Yep. Okay.
Mainly because Apocalypse was panned.
Yeah. Recording. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Pacific Rim 2 is now called Pacific Rim Maelstrom. Maelstrom.
Okay. Cool. You say tomato, I say tomato.
Mm-hmm. Mark Wahlberg is going to star in the Damien. Don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Yeah, good luck with that. That's why I left that for you. Yeah.
Okay. So, Mark Wahlberg will star in the Damien, don't know, directed $6 billion man, and he says he hopes will yield multiple sequels. So it's probably going to be terrible, and then we're going to have to deal with like two or three or four sequels that are also terrible.
Well, don't say that. It might not be terrible. Come on. I mean, I think I talked about this before. I have been recording the $6 billion man on my DVR whenever it comes on. We've got a channel that plays old like 70s and 80s TV shows. Basically, I'm looking for two or three episodes that I remember seeing that I want to watch again.
Mm-hmm.
But the show is unwatchable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm going, okay, like the establishing shots for a scene or the transition shots. I'm like, who was director of photography on this? It's like, this is really, I've seen better YouTube videos than this. And this was like prime time television back in the day. This was like a popular show. I'm like, wow, this is really bad. So hopefully they spend a little more time on the production quality of $6 billion man. But I like Mark Wahlberg, so I'll be interested to see what happens with that.
Speaking of production quality, a show that has really good production quality, The Expanse, season 2 of that show is premiering on February the 8th, 2017. So yay, that'll be fun. Still need to watch season one.
Oh, yeah. I hate you for that, Chris, because I decided to do what you did and not watch them until we get ready to record our Crash Couch show, which we still need to work on. Mm-hmm. So I watched like the first three episodes and that's it.
Yeah.
I need to see more.
I saw a spoiler a while back of somebody that dies, but thankfully I forgot who it was. So it's not a spoiler anymore because it's been so long since I saw the spoiler.
Well, you read the book, right?
No.
Oh, that's right. You haven't.
I got like a third through the book, and then I saw that the TV show was coming out.
I forgot about that. Well, yeah. I'm glad it was you on that because I finished the book years ago. So.
And finally, and I save this for last because I want to talk about it a little bit. The teaser trailer for Valyrian and the City of a Thousand Planets has been released.
Yes.
Now, this is a topic that you and I were talking about at Comic-Con because we saw a kind of a, not a booth really, but like a display for it.
Oh, they had a huge display for it. Yeah. In fact,
in the main hall.
Right, but before you were there, I was there on Thursday before you got down to New York, and I think if I remember correctly, on Thursday, the director, Luc Besson, was there. He was signing autographs inside the thing, and I meant to go back and get his autograph and never did, but I was like, oh, cool, it's going to be a movie. And then when we went back to the booth like Friday or Sunday, it was all about the graphic novel. Because I guess that's what it's based on.
Yeah.
And it was nothing about a movie anywhere I saw. And I'm like, was I just imagining the movie thing? Maybe I was. Okay. So we kind of blew it off. But yeah, trailer's out now and it's definitely happening as a movie. So I'm like, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did you think of the trailer?
I am very, very excited. I know nothing about it. I didn't even know this existed until we saw it at New York, but it looks really good.
Yeah, I didn't either. I had no idea what this was, and the booth they had or the display they had was very impressive, size wise and everything. So, and it's sci-fi and it's futuristic. So yeah, it's kind of right up my alley.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to say that it has what is her name? Kara Del, let's see. I'm looking at the pronunciation on Wikipedia. Kara Delevingne. She is in it.
Yeah, she looks familiar. What has she done? What else do you know? What else she's done?
Yeah, she was in. Well, first I know her from the movie Paper Towns, but she was in Suicide Squad.
Oh, that's right. She was. Yeah.
She was Enchantress.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so she is one of the main leads there. So that'll be exciting.
Nice.
Clive Owen is also in it, who I've seen some of his stuff, and mainly stuff in the mid-2000s, like Sin City and Children of Men.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him from that King Arthur movie, which when I was little I liked, but in you know, nowadays it's not the best. But hey, yep. But he's in it as well.
The visuals look very cool in this movie. I mean, it reminds me of what was that movie last year with Tom Hanks that played through three or four different times? Cloud Atlas. It reminds me of the futuristic stuff in that. It reminds me a little bit of the futuristic stuff in AI when they got to whatever that city was.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's got that interesting look of that real high-tech future. A lot of lights, a lot of, you know, brightness to it. It wasn't dark and dim like a Blade Runner is. It's got a very, very unique, high-tech, futuristic, modern look.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I was going to say that, you know, sci-fi start, you know, non-typical sci-fi. I'm not talking about like Star Wars or Star Trek or something like that, but stuff that is really unknown as like maybe an original story or a graphic novel that maybe not most people are aware of. It's not had the worst luck when it comes to doing film adaptations. Even if it doesn't make a lot at the theater, you know, it's not like bad movies. What was the one? It came out a while back that wasn't terrible.
I need a little more than that.
Was it Jupiter Ascending?
Oh, yeah, Jupiter Ascending. Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah, that wasn't a terrible sci-fi movie, was it?
I didn't see it. I wanted to. Yeah, I should put that back in my list to see, because I remember I wanted to see it, and I never had a chance in the theaters, and things come out of the theaters so fast these days.
Mm-hmm.
You wait a couple of weeks, and you're kind of SOL, so.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that this looks like it could be a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. Was there a release date anywhere about this? I haven't seen that yet.
Give me 1 second, and I just had it up. I should have wrote it down.
Assuming sometime next year.
Yes, it actually comes out July 27th. I'm sorry, July 21st, 2017. So
nice.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be something for our summer movie draft next year.
Mm-hmm. And I hope it. Hopefully it. Is not released alongside another really huge movie at that time. We always have big summer blockbusters, and I'm sure Marvel
release right around there. Yeah. Well, speaking of releases in the theaters, box office results for last weekend, to nobody's surprise, topping out the list was Doctor Strange with $85 million.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad haul for the opening weekend.
Not bad, definitely not bad, especially compared to what we've seen for the rest of this.
This goes right along with what we talked about before. It's been either all or nothing. You know, it's like one movie does everything, and everything else is down around, you know, 10, 15 million, that's it. This weekend was a little bit of an exception to that, because Trolls debuted as well as Doctor Strange. And it did $46 million. So, you know, for a kid's movie up against another big movie out there, that maybe some kids are going to see anyways. I think 46 is pretty respectable.
Mm-hmm.
Hacksaw Ridge, that's the movie about the kid that was not wanting to fight in the war, and he was going to be the rescue, the medic, and he rescues everybody. True story. Looked pretty good. That made $15 million in its first week, and then we have a couple movies that are hungover for 2 and 3 weeks here. Boo, Madea Halloween, that made $7.7 million for a total of $64 in its third week. And Inferno, the Tom Hanks movie, came in fifth at $6.2 million, topping out at $26 million total. Speaking of movies that didn't do well, I think that $26 million for a movie like that is probably not what they were hoping for.
Yeah, which... okay, so... have you seen any of the other movies in that franchise?
I've seen at least one, I think.
Okay, it's The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons.
I saw Da Vinci Code, yeah.
Okay, so it's based on a series of books by Dan Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Chronologically, it's Angels and Demons, Da Vinci Code. The third book is The Lost Symbol, and then the fourth book is Inferno. I've read all four of them. And I like them just because that's my type of book. I like,
yeah,
it's kind of a mystery.
They were good
thriller.
Books. I read two of them. I read Da Vinci Code and Lost Symbol.
Mm-hmm. You need to go back and read Angels and Demons because it's probably my favorite.
Okay, cool.
So, and in the movie release, they did Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons. They were going to make a Lost Symbol, but then Inferno came out and they decided to do that instead of Lost Symbol. So now we have Inferno, and I'm a little disappointed that, one, it didn't do so well, and two, people are really panning it. And
really? See, I haven't heard any news about it, but yeah, I'm looking at the Box Office Mojo stuff here, and yeah, $27.7 million mm-hmm. on a $75 million budget.
Oof. Yeah.
But internationally, it's done $158, so okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's done a lot better internationally than it has here in the U.S.
Yeah, it's just, it kind of upsets me because, like I said, I'm a fan of the books. And, you know, there's people that aren't too, which is fine. But, you know, it's just, to give you a comparison of just how bad that is, the Da Vinci Code domestically made $217
million. Wow.
And foreign made $540 million for a total of $758 million worldwide.
But now Da Vinci Code was the first movie released, right?
It was.
And I think that was back when Dan Brown was still on a huge high from all the books coming out.
Yeah, so because the Da Vinci Code is really, the book was really controversial, and then when the movie came out, it was, you know, it was one of those things, and people were like, "Oh, we got to go see this because,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, of the controversy."
It's so controversy, yeah, yeah,
yeah. To give you an example about, or to give another comparison, Angels and Demons, it opened at $46 million. Ended up grossing $133 million domestically, and then I think domestically, yeah, and then Inferno opened for $14 million and it only grossed $27 million. So something tells me that we might not be seeing any more Dan Brown books.
Yeah, at least I don't think
in
so.
in this franchise. I mean, books, yes, because I know he's already writing another one. But not movie adaptations. Which is weird, because it had Tom Hanks and Felicity Jones, which are two, obviously Tom Hanks is a huge name, and Felicity Jones, I mean, she's in Star Wars, or will be in Star Wars in a month.
Right, right.
And she's, you know, pretty popular already, so it just surprises me.
Yeah, it is. I mean, especially after the first ones did so well, this one just kind of drops off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it's that much different in terms of, you know, look and feel and story than the first ones were, as far as, you know, being good. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering why it fell off the earth so fast.
And I read the book over the summer. I actually got it when it came out, but I just had the chance to read it over the summer finally. And it was probably my least, actually, honestly, Da Vinci Code was my least favorite. Of all four. This is three. Lost the Bulls 2. Angels and Demons is one.
All three Angels and Demons. I really liked Lost the Bulls. I thought it was an excellent book.
It was. I was very, very pleased with it. But it's just, I don't know, maybe people are tired of that kind of thriller, action-adventure-y type of story. But who knows? I'll still buy the next book when it comes out. And then probably take another 3 years to read it.
I do everything audiobook wise, so I'm always getting through books pretty fast. In fact, I am anxiously awaiting Tuesday when Catalyst is released,
mm-hmm.
so I can devour that in audiobook. Let's see here. New releases for movies this week. The Arrival is coming out. That's a new sci-fi movie. Looks pretty good, with aliens coming to Earth and us trying to talk to them. So that should be fun. It's got 96 on Rotten Tomatoes. And let's see what else. Almost Christmas is coming out too, which, hey, it is almost Christmas. So
yeah, hard to believe.
Good time for that. Not this weekend, but I saw a trailer the other day for something called Office Christmas Party. Very irreverent looking comedy, but looks like it might be fun. Just thought I'd throw that out there for you guys. A DVD, Finding Dory, has finally come out on DVD, so that'll be out there. So check that out as well. Well, Chris, I think that's about it for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to add in last minute.
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, cool. In that case, then, if you want to get a hold of us, send us an email, outerrim@randomchatter.com, the best way to get a hold of us, and tell us what you think, what you'd like to hear us cover in the future.
Mm-hmm. And you can find us online at a variety of places. We have our Facebook, which is facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. We have our Twitter for the show, which is @OuterRimPodcast. We have the Twitter for the network, which is @RandomChatter. My Twitter is @TheCurseOfChris. Eric's Twitter is @EricBlythe. That's EricBlythe. And Lou, what is your Twitter?
Just my name, Lou Secki, LouSecki.
You know, I noticed that you tweeted the other day about your Hallmark Death Star tree topper, and someone attacked you for that.
Did you see that? You see that, yes. Troll? I was like, what is going on here? I got all offended. I'm like, oh my God, read my tweet. You don't even know what you're talking mm-hmm. about. And I don't know if I tend to look at people's past tweets to kind of see where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And this is clearly a gentleman that works in retail and hates it.
because he's pretty much every other retail worker.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know, retail's not easy. I've done retail all my life. And, you know, I firmly do not believe in the saying that the customer is always right, because the customer is not always right. Mm. And that's kind of the gist of all his tweets going forward. And I'm like, dude, wait, did you not understand that I have a product that doesn't work and I just want one that works? It's like he was attacking me like, oh, yeah, warranty on a tree topper. What do you? I'm like, it's a $100 electronic gadget that mm-hmm. doesn't work. But anyway.
Oh, man.
Oh, I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I forgot about that.
Yeah, if you want to know more about Lou's interesting Hallmark experience, go listen to this most recent episode of Echo Base, because it's an interesting story.
Yes.
So, meanwhile, speaking of Echo Base, you can find all of our shows at randomchatter.com, including Echo Base, along with our main flagship show, Random Chatter, Green Justice, Scarlet Velocity, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, the Retro Convo, Sabacc Table, Cordcast, and our latest podcast, Ghost Stories, a Star Wars Rebels podcast, which I was a guest on for the most recent episode.
Oh, cool, cool. Very nice.
Oh, and you know, I kind of want to make a public congratulations to our Ghost Stories and Retro Condo host Mike on his marriage this past week.
That's right. And you know what? I can give Mike the same advice that my father-in-law gave me when I got married.
What was that?
When we, you know, came home and announced our engagement, he looked at me and he told me, he said, Lou, you know, I didn't know what true love was till I got married. Then it was too late. So just I'll throw that out there for Mike, so he can take that as you wish, Mike. In other news here, we'd like you to spread the word. If you like the show, you know, leave reviews for us on iTunes and on Stitcher. Tell your friends about us. Just you know, any way you can, just get the word out about the shows and let people know how good we are.
Mm-hmm.
You can also listen to us live. We're bringing back the live show. It's probably there for another week or so, because Eric is traveling this week and next week, so he won't be around mm-hmm. to do the live streaming for us. But when we're back, we'll be doing Monday nights at 9 o'clock, and we'll do Thursday nights at 9 o'clock as well. Echo Base on Mondays, and The Outer Rim, and
Random Chatter.
I was trying to blind. I see random thoughts. And Random Chatter on Thursdays as well. We'll do this at 9 o'clock Eastern time. And, of course, we have just revamped our Patreon system. So if you'd like to support the network, we do appreciate everybody who donates and supports us. We do really appreciate that more than you guys will ever know. It does help keep us in business and keep the lights on around here. So go check out those new perks. And probably the most exciting part of that is what's our Slack channel perk now? Is it $1?
Yes. Anyone who donates $1 a month to the network gets an invite to our Slack channel.
We have a lot of fun there. It's kind of our own little closed network chat feature that we can all chat all kinds of different stuff, anything from sports. You know, we do a lot of sports talk on, well, no, not a lot of it. We do some. Some of us do at least. Mm-hmm. But Star Wars to TV shows to movies to just general topics, and it's a fun way to interact with us. And truthfully, I the interaction between all the fans is actually more impressive to me than the interactions that we have with the fans. Truthfully, there's so much going on there, so it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way to pass the time during your work day or school day or whatever kind of day you have.
I'm bummed now, because I used to be on Slack a lot more than I am now. My new job doesn't really permit me to be on as much as I'd like to be, and I'm so much more busy at work than I used to be. I don't have time to get on there and chat. So I get to the end of the day, and I open up Slack, and I'm like, 300 messages. I'm never going to get through all these. So I find myself missing conversations or reading back through them and going, oh, I could have commented there, but now it'll be so far out of context. I don't even know what I'm talking about. So. But it's a lot of fun, and we encourage people to do that, and I'm glad we opened up to more people so everybody can participate. On that note, I think we're about done here, so we'll just wrap this right up and see you next week, guys.
See everyone.
The Force will be with you, always.